Again, this one got a lot of first place votes, and maybe rightfully so. SummerSlam 2002.
Oh, I love
It's
this
on
one.
all of our lists.
What was that, Dusty?
It was on every single one of our lists. You, me, George.
Let's see. Uniondale, New York. Long Island. Okay, yep. Let's see. Opening match on the pay-per-view. Kurt Angle versus Rey Mysterio in 10 minutes via submission.
Ray's first match.
Yeah, and he loses. Good thing, bad thing, indifferent, whatever.
Well, I was a little confused. Well, that I didn't know who that guy was that showed up first because he's about 45 pounds heavier than the Rey that I last saw. But like, I remember Angle wearing. Isn't this the one where he looks like he's wearing a giant popcorn box with an A on it? Like the singlet with the stripes. Yeah, I mean, I just remember being kind of confused why they're already putting Mysterio with Angle, but I think they wanted Mysterio to seem like a star already because they've been doing vignettes for weeks leading up to it. So this is when they were using vignettes for everything, which was great. So.
No, I think it was good. Mysterio is one of those guys who can lose and lose and lose and still be over.
Oh yeah, crowd loved it. Didn't care.
It really doesn't matter that he lost. It was they wanted him to have a good showing against a good opponent, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And they probably also, from Kurt's point of view, they probably wanted to put Kurt in the ring with somebody kind of different than who he'd been wrestling, you know?
Right,
How
which had
much
been
different?
Edge, wasn't it?
Well, I was thinking just jokingly, how much different can you get than Triple H, or from Triple H than Rey Mysterio? And he put on a great match against Mysterio, kept up with all his high flying moves and speed and everything, and locked in that ankle lock. And they had a really good little 10-minute opener. Next match was Ric Flair beating Chris Jericho with the figure four. I don't remember the actual story going into it, but I do remember Jericho trying to use the figure four at one point in the match, and Flair fought it off, and then as soon as Flair locked in his figure four, Jericho tapped out.
Yeah, I was a little confused by this at the point at the time, but I don't know. I guess I'm still a little confused by it, but I don't know. It was good. I mean, it was solid for Flair in 2002. So.
Yeah, Flair in 2002 could probably still outwork half the roster.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, it was weird because Flair will job to anybody, all of a sudden gets a win, you know?
Right.
Right.
Well, he really didn't need it. I don't know if Jericho had just been unified world champion, what, 5 months earlier, so.
Yeah.
It was kind of confusing, but eh.
The only thing I could really think is if they were, I can't remember what came after this, but maybe they were trying to build Flair up to wrestle Lesnar as
Yeah,
the
I can't
baby
remember.
Lesnar, but who knows?
Yeah.
Rather than pretend we know,
Go to the next one.
good for Flair. Edge, speaking of Edge beats Eddie Guerrero in 12 minutes. This was the spring and summer of Edge. They were putting him against anybody and everybody they could come up with. He beat Kurt Angle at Backlash, I think.
Yep, and he teamed with Hogan to win the world or the tag titles.
Right.
Yep. And then here he beats Eddie Guerrero in 12 minutes. So again, you got two good workers, and to me,
And
it's
the
logical. You want to build up your home guy. Of
Yep.
course, they're not really, they don't do anything to make Guerrero look bad, but they want to build up
Nope.
Edge so they have him wrestle these established veterans, excellent
Right.
wrestlers, have him win.
And the ironic thing is Edge doesn't really get over very far. Like he reaches the point. Babyface Edge wasn't going really anywhere. It's sort of, I think the fans felt like they were getting it shoved down their throat. So then, all he needed to do was fuck a human skeleton, and then he's believable again. So, well, because he gets hurt not too long after this, right? Like
Yeah,
a
a
lot.
few months, and he's gone for like 15 months. So,
Yeah, because I want to say, didn't he wrestle Booker T at WrestleMania 19 for the shampoo commercial?
no, that was
Yep.
18.
18.
It was because 19 Booker T faces Triple H.
Oh, yep. Sorry about that. I was trying to think of what
Because he
wrestler.
misses, Edge misses 19 and 20.
And 20, yeah. So he was injured right before 19 and came back right after 20. Okay, there we go.
Yep.
See,
There we
this is
go.
part of the problem. The main event talent that WWE has right now, if it's not too old or too stale, it's too injured.
Yep.
Edge has always hurt. Always.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
Edge
a shame,
and Batista always hurt.
I hope for this with Cena, and Cena has proven me wrong. Of course, he probably, the last time he was out, was legitimately probably for a drug test, but fuck it, I don't care, I'll say it. Edge, if he's smart, he'll sit out for as long as he possibly can, let this Achilles tendon heal up, and just let all of his other nagging injuries heal. And I realized that he was gone for, 3 month stretch in 2008 from SummerSlam after Hell in the Cell to Survivor Series. Good. You know what?
Yep.
I understand wanting your main eventers healthy and around, but if you can't get both healthy and around, then get healthy first and then be around.
Well, how many times has Batista come back only to be gone immediately after because he's come back too soon?
Yeah.
I mean,
he's a problem. He really is.
Yep. Yes, I agree. So, anyway, going back to SummerSlam.
Let's see. Oh, Lord. Here's a great match for you. The Un-Americans, Lance Storm and Christian, beat Booker T and Goldust. When Test was pinned? I don't know if I'm reading that wrong, but the important thing is the Un-Americans came out with their upside-down American flag.
Yep.
Dastardly Canadians won the match.
Yeah, Test made a run in.
Yeah.
Giving Booker T a big boot.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny because on a different website, Figure Four, there's an interview with Lance Storm, and he actually talks about the Un-Americans quite a bit just recently. So it's kind of interesting about how they had big main event plans for him, but they didn't get enough heat for trying to burn an American flag. I don't know if you remember that. They just thought that they were afraid to get heat and basically pulled the plug out from them. So they're already relegated down the card.
Yep. That's the thing. And then Storm's point was, as a heel, don't be afraid to get heat.
Yep.
Don't be cool.
Yep.
I don't know. This actually, I wanted to bring up a point for what it's worth, which isn't really much, I don't think, but something about Booker T and SummerSlam. 2001, he loses to The Rock, who's returning to pay-per-view. He loses this tag match. 2003, I don't think he's even on the card. But 2004, loses to John Cena. 2005, loses to... is he not on that card either? He would not be on 2005. 2006, loses to a returning Batista. 2007, loses to a returning Triple H. Poor Booker.
He's the Tito Santana of SummerSlam.
Oh, shit. So poor guy.
Yep.
But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up.
I did not notice that.
Yep. Here's a hell of a match. Rob Van Dam beats Chris Benoit to win the Intercontinental title. This is 16 and a half minutes, and deservedly so.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very good.
Very good match.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Van Dam won the title, is that right?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
So that was pretty cool. I don't know. It's just interesting to see who they're putting over at this point. This was getting to be the low point of wrestling, really. I mean, we're still kind of in a rut right now, but this was like Triple H fucking a mannequin time. This was Brand.
Oh, yeah.
Time.
Well, this was Hogan winning the belt in 2002 time. Basically, you know, building up Triple H to have him beat Jericho and then immediately having him lose the next pay-per-view to Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The world title changes like every other pay-per-view. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to throw this out there. 2 points to make about this time around. The bad stuff was on Raw. The good stuff was on SmackDown for sure.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Especially starting around this time in the summer. The other point
I want
to make.
Just like every down period in WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Raw sucks and SmackDown is awesome. The other point I wanted to make, for as good as this pay-per-view is, I have this awful memory of after this match happened, I think Benoit had gone over to SmackDown in the trade, or in the draft, whatever they had at that exact time. I think there was a trade at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so psyched to be on SmackDown!
Jesus Christ. Money promo, if I ever heard it. Benoit was the Intercontinental Champion. Bischoff wanted the belt back on Raw, so Van Damme wins it, and then they go backstage like they did in between or after every single match to where Big
Oh, yeah.
and Stephanie were in the office, and it was the worst acting
Oh, God.
I've ever seen, and just the most awkward interaction. And then Bischoff was like, well, I guess the Intercontinental belt's coming back to Raw. And then Stephanie, like, pauses for about 20 seconds and then just starts cackling and walks off. This is awful. This is, like, the worst shit. I feel so bad because this is such a good pay-per-view, but then, like, every, you know, 15 minutes or so, you have to see fucking middle school acting 101.
Stephanie is one of the worst characters in TV.
Oh, my God. No kidding.
Awful, awful, awful bullshit.
Yep. And then Bischoff is no better when he's like, and that was a pretty good match. Speaking of which, wow, how's your father doing?
Speaking of which, like he's not working.
Well, this pay-per-view is responsible for the year of horrible Triple H to follow here soon, because the Intercontinental still gets destroyed, you know. The European hardcore, everything disappears, which is fine for those other two, but then they kill the Intercontinental and create the world title, and the year of Triple H begins.
Undertaker versus Test.
Next.
Yep.
Let's see. Okay, here we go. Here's the fucking match to end all matches. Possibly, I don't know, I might have to go through the list. I might have to go through all these cards. This might be the... I'm just saying this off the top of my head, so please correct me if I'm wrong. This might be the best match that's ever happened at a SummerSlam. Shawn Michaels... What's that? I'm sorry, go ahead and say that again.
It's good. Go ahead.
Shawn Michaels beats Triple H in almost 30 minutes in a non-sanctioned match.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And
well, because...
The angle,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, the angle going into it is Shawn Michaels, he shows up here and there. He pretended to be commissioner. He was a guest referee once in a while, but he's been out for 4.5 years. Well, then he decides that he wants to come back for one more match. Triple H is like, yeah, sure, but then he attacks him, and then they have the match,
well,
and then he attacks him again after the match.
After Shawn had joined the NWO, which is forgotten.
That's right, yeah.
Shawn and, but yeah. And the question, of course, going in is how's Shawn going to be, you know, because he hadn't seen him since strung out back injury man in 98. So, and they kept trying to bring him back in 01, and he'd show up high as a kite or in no condition to compete. So, with the proverbial personal demons. So,
but then he finds our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and turns his life around and. God damn if he doesn't come back.
But in Shawn Michaels' case, I fully advocate finding Jesus because it really turned him into something good.
Yep.
Yeah, he's been back now for 7 years. These 7 years are better than his best 7 years previously.
Absolutely.
Yeah, from 91 to 98, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
He might be the best 7 years a wrestler has ever had.
That could very well be. Definitely.
For not being really, he's had one like arbitrary world title run, just sort of as a, you know, here you go, and then he hasn't really been in the title hunt since. That's pretty incredible considering how many classic matches he's had, because they let him too. But I mean, he's
right.
And I
he's
will
phenomenal.
Say, there's something to be said about the emotion of this match.
Oh, yeah.
JR on commentary is phenomenal. Jim Ross, this is like, this should be, if anybody ever questions Jim Ross not being the best play-by-play guy in the business, this should be the match that they watch to be proven wrong.
Yeah.
And then Triple H attacking Shawn Michaels after the match with the sledgehammer.
Mm-hmm.
I seriously just watched this match a week ago, and they suckered me in, man. I was like, you son of a bitch. You fucker.
Mm-hmm.
I got all mad at Triple H. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot this is fake.
Oh, it's so good. So it's
JR is happier than a pig in barbecue sauce.
And I'm happy when a pig is in barbecue sauce.
Yep. So
and on a delicious pizza, Black Market pizza.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I was waiting for that one. Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, considering Sean doesn't come out to his, it's really confusing coming out to his sexy boy music in jeans and cowboy boots, but still, he showed up in a big, big way.
Oh, Lord, yes.
But better than those banana boat shorts he used to wear.
Yeah. or his wife's blouse.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's awesome. No,
so.
this, I don't know. Dusty, when I said I think this might be the best match in SummerSlam history, and you said, it's good. Did you have something else in mind? Did you have another match in mind that we could compare?
Well, off the top of my head, I'm going to have to. Maybe this should be my assignment. Best match for each pay-per-view.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe. Because I remember really liking Warrior versus Rude, but I don't know if it's better.
Okay.
And I know Angle had a really good SummerSlam match. Can't remember against who. I don't know.
And, I mean, we can talk just quickly, just to mention Brock Lesnar beat The Rock.
Yep.
16 minutes to win the WWE title.
This is when the crowd turned Lesnar babyface.
Yep.
Yeah.
Brock had been in the company for 4 months, and, I mean, this is how you do it. You don't fuck around. You don't dilly-dally.
Nope.
You don't lollygag. When you have a guy who's ready to be the champion, you give him the belt, and he's over like crazy.
Beats That's both right. parties at a pay-per-view, you know, I mean, just destroys guys on the way up. Which is why Austin quit, because they were going to have him, which didn't make any sense to me, having Austin lose that early in a King of the Ring. But
I can see both sides of this argument. It was too early and didn't make any sense, but number two is like, they're asking you to lose, do your job, you know?
Well, exactly. See, the only problem I had, I would have been fine with it had it been like even the King of the Ring finals. Just, I think the qualifier was a little, you know.
Yeah.
But again, no, yeah, it's your job. Do it. Don't take the ball and go home and then get buried on Confidential for the next 3 months. Yeah.
Steve is also the guy who shows up to every goddamn thing he does with a brand new t-shirt. He's
yep.
the guy who knows how to make money. He probably saw Brock Lesnar and he's like, goddamn, I can make some money off of this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the
mm-hmm.
first chance for the two of them was to have him lose to him on free TV.
And I also...
two ways. You can say... you know,
yeah.
save their first match for pay-per-view, or have Brock beat him on free TV and everyone sees it, and then when it's time to properly build up a main event match, then people want to see Austin get his retribution.
I think Brock got over when he destroyed Hogan the month before, rubbed his blood all over his chest. That was... Hogan just died. I mean, Hogan didn't complain. He did it, and, you know.
Say what you will about Hogan, but... If he smells money, he'll do business with you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He was willing to do it with Goldberg.
Yep.
In fact, Goldberg didn't even know about it. If I just read Sex, Lies, and Headlocks again, and
yep.
Goldberg had said it somewhere, or the first time he heard about the fact that he was going to wrestle Hogan for the belt was when he was watching Thunder the week before. So yeah, Hogan, you're right. Hogan will do the job if he knows he's going to
yep.
make a profit.
Yep.
Well, I think, you know, Hogan was probably hoping for an eventual rematch, just like you said, and, you know, instead came back as Mr. America. So, you know.
Which was fun in its own way.
In its
yeah.
way, yeah, it was. It ruined Sean O'Hare, but I think
yep.
that recently, too. Anywho, what I kind of wanted to do was get that out of the way so we could segue into the number one SummerSlam of all time, as voted on by the peeps out there. And I said that I thought Shawn Michaels versus Triple H might be the best SummerSlam match ever. But an argument could certainly be made for Bret the Hitman Hart versus
Oh, man.
At SummerSlam 1992 from London, England, Wembley Stadium. 80,355 people, legitimate sellout of Wembley
wow.
Stadium.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. The most legit fans they've ever drawn.
Yep, it's true.
Yeah.
So...
I mean, and it was great, too, because the scene was different. They were outdoors. The crowd was, you know, the crowd was just amped. They had their goofy little air horns, and they were doing their...
the chant.
Yeah.
Bulldog!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. There were three... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and the first thing you see coming out when the, you know, on the tape version, the first thing you see is... the Road Warriors, their LOD, come in the ring on motorcycles, it's like, whoa, this is really different, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels
yeah.
completely different
yep.
than
just,
everything else.
Of course, the problem being that Rocco was on the front of one of them. Anyway,
yeah, well, yeah.
I'll just mention these quickly because they're on ProWrestlingHistory.com. The three pre-show matches. Papa Shango beats Tito Santana, so Shango's already not on a pay-per-view despite being involved in the main event of WrestleMania 8. Tatanka
right.
beats the Berserker. Tatanka in the middle of his undefeated streak, not on the pay-per-view. And the Bushwhackers and Hacksaw Jim Duggan team up to beat the Nasty Boys and the Mountie.
Superman Mountie!
Superman Mountie! The Nasty Boys.
This is going to protect my nose. But who?
It's going to protect you. And that and he'd be on the pay-per-view. let's see. But you know what? Sometimes you have to sacrifice when you've got a 15-minute opener between the LOD and Money, Inc.
Yep.
Pretty good match, even though Hawk was ready to cash it in and get the fuck out of there.
Oh, yeah, because that's their last match for years in WWF.
Yep. DiBiase rocking the white tuxedo also. Looking
yep.
Rocco embarrassing the shit out of everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. Second match in the card, Nails. Oh, Lord, we could do an audio about Nails all by ourselves. beats Virgil.
Kevin Kelly!
Oh, my God. Dusty, I got to get your opinions on Nails. Let's talk about him, especially beating. Let's talk about Nails and where he was at the time and Virgil and where he was at the time on the card.
Well, I was still a bit of a mark in 92, you know. Mm-hmm. I knew it was fake, and I knew yada, 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 and I was subscribing to the Wrestling Tribune and yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
But Nails was kind of like, whoa, holy shit, you know.
Like, this guy's scary?
Yeah, like, this guy's a monster, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he still had that element to him. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really there when I watch the tapes back again, but at the time, I really bought into it, and
mm-hmm.
there's something to be said about that, you know?
And so what is it about Virgil that they kept putting him on pay-per-view to have him job to these new guys?
Good enough. And
well, that's what, like, Dusty and I were actually talking about that last night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was a credible guy who had had some pay-per-view matches, who could help. He was like a pay-per-view jobber.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
He was credible enough to be on a pay-per-view, but really was just there to make the other guy look good or
yeah,
look like Nails.
He win a squash match once a month or something.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure.
Just
I mean, he
enough
beat,
to keep him in the public eye. Mm-hmm.
He beat
yep.
Kato. He beat Kato every fucking month on Prime Time Wrestling. It was like goddamn welfare. Oh, the first of the month. Oh, Virgil beat Kato.
Yep.
But no, that's pretty much it. Virgil, he'd been in the company about 5 years at this point with Ted
mm-hmm.
DiBiase for the first four years of that. And then, yep. yeah, $1 million champion. People liked him. That's the other thing,
right.
too. People liked Virgil.
Just a year before, he's huge. I mean,
yeah.
the $1 million title match was at SummerSlam 91.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a year before, so he was still credible enough. I think people remembered him, and you know, he was just there to make Nails look like Nails.
Yep. Well, I'm looking up and down the card, and even at the preliminary matches, I don't really see anybody else who could have jobbed a Nail. They couldn't have been Tatanka.
Right.
That would have been counterproductive.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, now they would have just put Tatanka against Nails and had one of them beat the other and, you know, sacrifice one for the other instead of sacrificing Virgil, who nobody cared about. So.
Yep.
I mean, the only choices were, like, Virgil or Hacksaw Duggan. That was...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or Tito, and the thing is, no one really cared that much about Tito at this point, so it pretty much had
Fine.
To be Virgil.
Yep.
Okay. Let's see. Shawn Michaels wrestles Rick Martel to a double countout, the stipulation being Sensational Sherry doesn't want these two men to strike each other in the face. On a couple of different televised shows up to this point, Rick Martel had been making googly eyes at Shawn Michaels' valet, Sensational Sherry,
yep.
and Sherry was winking back at him once in a while. So thus this match came about, heel versus heel. And is that Jupiter? No, that's the moon. Okay.
The moon.
part of Sherry's outfit was missing during this match.
Yep.
Which is good. Very good
yep.
thing.
Moon over my hammy.
My hammy, yeah.
Just for being a heel versus heel match with kind of a corny stipulation and a silly backstory to it, I mean, it was a good match.
Pretty entertaining. Again, it's different. It's completely different than everything else that had come before, you know, that time. So I always enjoyed it. That was like one of the first tapes I had in because I started in January of 93, so that was still like fresh in stores. So
yeah.
And it was...
Another thing I really liked about this pay-per-view was I didn't know it was possible for bad guys to face each other.
Right.
Yeah. That's true. And then these guys, they pulled it off, too. They were both dislikable in this match.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, this is a really good example of a heel versus heel match. Well done, guys. A couple of professionals. And, of course, Sherry fakes fainting, and Sean drags her and then throws her over his shoulder. Martel even kind of baby-faced it up at the end until he dumped a bucket of water on her.
Right.
But anyway, it was a good match. 10 minutes.
Yep.
Which leads to the greatest promo in wrestling history.
Oh, God, which one was that?
The Nasty Boys.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's right. Matt, what did they call her, a rat?
I thought the Wicked Witch of the West melted when she got wet.
Shit, that's awesome. I forgot all about that. Oh, my God, the Nasty Boys were great. God, they were good.
Right.
They were hilarious. And they're all, what's that?
No, go ahead.
They were also there to comment on the following match, which was the tag team title match, Earthquake and Tugboat or Typhoon or Buffoon. The Natural Disaster is defending their tag belts against the Beverly Brothers.
Yeah.
Dusty, I know you're a fan of the Beverly Brothers, so I'll let you start this one.
Yeah, the Beverlys are my favorite team ever. They are my Russo brothers.
I don't even think the Russos are Jordan's Russo brothers.
Well,
so true.
Whatever. I'd been a fan of the Destruction Crew back in 88, 89.
Yeah.
When I first started watching wrestling, I used to get AWA if you turn the antenna halfway, you know?
Hey, yep.
Something came in pretty decent on a channel that wouldn't otherwise come in, you know?
Yeah.
And it was right at the height of the Team Challenge series. And, of course, at the time, even at the time, I knew that it was stupid. But I really liked Larry Zbyszko because he was a pompous windbag, and I really liked the Destruction Crew. So, like a sentimental thing with them. So
sure.
When I saw them come to the WWF as the Beverly Brothers, I immediately marked out, oh, that's the Destruction Crew. Awesome. I hope they win the titles, you know? Of course, they never did, but, you know, like
yep.
kind of my hometown team, you know?
Okay, that makes sense.
So
yeah, and this wasn't a bad match. You know, Typhoon played the baby face in peril the whole time, which is hard to do for two guys who are that size, but they're not saying they did a good job of it. I'm just saying it happened.
Yeah.
I think they were smart. They worked around their limitations.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they keep Typhoon on his back the whole time, so there you go.
Yep, yep.
I don't know. It was okay. I think Money Incorporated had just lost the belts to the Natural Disasters like a couple weeks earlier, or the TV taping before. So you thought that you were going to see the Legion of Doom against Money Inc. for the tag team belts, and then they pulled the old Sugar Me Doo, and I don't know. They weren't. It wasn't worse off for it, but whatever. I still the Natural Disasters as tag team champions is ridiculous to me.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Next match, oh Lord, here we go, Crush versus Repo Man.
Yep.
Former Demolition fight.
Crush beats Smash of Demolition.
Yep.
He has submission with the head cruncher. Another guy, Crush, that are trying to build up, you know, you got, kind of symmetrically speaking, you got Crush on one side of things and Nails on the other side.
Leading to their classic feud.
Oh, Jesus Christ, yeah, that would have been a main event nowhere in the country.
Kona.
Yeah, maybe. God, how long had Repo Man been around? Since, like, right after SummerSlam the year before, I think.
Yep.
Yep.
So he'd been around for a year and pretty much served his
purpose. He helped DiBiase get the $1 million belt back.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, before Virgil pawned it off for something like a boombox.
He probably would have. Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. So here's Crusher Khrushchev, a.k.a. Demolition Smash, now Repo Man, just kind of doing jobs for guys on their way up.
Mr. Hole-in-One, yep.
Mr. Hole-in-One.
Lord. So, I don't know. It was what it was. It was Crush at a big pay-per-view, getting his slow burn. Getting his win on. It would eventually go nowhere. Let's see. So, we had all these preliminary matches because we had to make room for a couple of half-hour matches on this show, which is fine with me. Ultimate Warrior beats Randy Savage. Yeah, they were. Randy Savage was the world champion coming into this. Warrior wins this match against Savage by countout, so Savage is still the champion.
So we talked about Warrior matches. I would say this is the third best Warrior match ever.
Okay.
Third or fourth. You've got to factor in the Hogan match.
The Hogan match, yeah, absolutely. Dusty, why don't you give us the background on this one, since this is actually a pretty classic match with all of us.
Classic match, and I remember watching it. It was just chaos with the outside interference and stuff. This is one of my favorite things about 1992 is that with Ric Flair on top, they seem to take more liberties with rule breaking and stuff. They let a little bit more stuff slide than they normally would have, and it made for more entertaining matches.
Yes.
But yeah, I guess the storyline was Ric Flair and Mr. Perfect are playing both of them off against each other by saying that they're going to be in each one's corner.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, the announcers are speculating, is it going to be Warrior? Are they with Warrior or are they with Savage? Well, whoever they're with is obviously going to win, you know, because it'll be 3-on-1.
Which is a good way to put over Flair and Perfect, Flair not wrestling on the show. It's good to keep him in the limelight and good to, and it's great to say that, you know, whoever side he's on, that's the guy that's going to win.
Exactly.
Well, and it built intrigue for a two good guy match, you know, which was kind of didn't really have much of a build other than that.
Mm-hmm. So it allowed the audience to kind of feel free to boo one of the guys. It's like you kind of just take your side. You assume Ric Flair and Mr. Perfect might side with, and then you boo that guy if you so choose to.
Well, I don't know who he's with, but I think it's I don't know.
Oh, my God. I love it. Sir Bobby, the King of England. So
yep. Awesome.
Jesus.
King of Beverly Hills. Yep.
You know, I remember when I was the champion.
Yeah.
When were you ever champion?
Oh, I was the champion of my neighborhood.
At the prettiest state in town that week.
But yeah, this is a great match. It went back and forth for a good, you know, 15, almost 20 minutes maybe before Flair and Perfect even came out.
Yep.
Right.
And then, of course, the crowd boos the shit out of them, too. The crowd was pretty solidly behind Warrior, but, you know, they weren't vociferously against Savage by any means.
Savage did a good job of playing a subtle heel for part of it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you watch the match, Savage kind of wrestles as the heel, because he was much more comfortable doing it, because he had been it for a couple of years before. So.
Right, Warrior was never really a heel. Mm-hmm.
No.
Right.
So.
True. So yeah, and then the match ends when Savage realizes that Flair has just hit Warrior with the steel chair, knocking him out. Goes to the top rope like he's going to hit the elbow, and then he's like, oh, shit, I didn't do that to him. And what's great is that he looks at the camera. I don't know if he realized he was looking at the camera at the time, but he was all bug-eyed, and he's like, oh, yeah. And then he turns around and goes after, he goes to jump off the top rope onto the floor against Flair, who hits him in the knee with the chair, causing the count-out victory for the Ultimate Warrior, who, by the way, was wrestling in one of his slim, good-body outfits that night.
Yep.
I hated that crap.
Yeah, the airbrush.
That was the second Warrior, so.
Well,
that was Warrior number two. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He had to dress like that because he wasn't nearly as anabolic as the original.
No, definitely not. And his giant fuzzy type outfit, yeah.
Yeah, and if anybody out there believes us, then you can go to hell.
Yep.
Right, there were obviously more than two Warriors.
Right, yeah, exactly. Thank you. Had to keep Barry Windham busy somehow or other.
Barry Windham and Kerry Von Erich.
Right. Yep. All right. Anyway, great match. Go back and watch it if you don't believe us. And then Flair would beat Savage for the belt at like the next TV taping or something like that. It was almost right away.
Yep.
And that match is on YouTube if you want to look it up. Let's see. Let's just keep going. Next match, Undertaker versus Kamala. They had just started feuding. It was going to culminate at the Survivor Series, but this match ends in disqualification.
Really keeps the streak of starts the streak of bad Undertaker pay-per-view matches because he's wrestling the biggest, tallest, or fattest dude they can find.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only thing I remember is the hearse coming to the ring.
Yes, that was classic. And then the thing that I remember about this match, other than, like you said, the start of the streak of shit-tastic matches like with Giant Gonzalez, King Kong Bundy, is at the end of the match, after three consecutive splashes off of three different ropes, Undertaker still sits up, and the look on Kamala's face is priceless.
Yep.
And then as he's backpedaling down the aisle, and I'm sure he planned to do it, but he tripped and fell backwards onto his butt. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
James Sugar Bear Harris is worth every penny you paid that man.
Yes, he is.
Yep.
Anyway, for 3.5 minutes, it was really just an angle on it.
Yep. Yeah. Leading to their casket match at Survivor Series.
Coffin match, thank you.
Coffin match, excuse me.
That one was a coffin
Touch
match.
Your mouth.
Okay. I know.
And then we get the match that probably put this one over the top as being the best SummerSlam of all time. Intercontinental title match. Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, get it? They're in Britain, so it's a big deal.
Uh-huh.
Beats Bret the Hitman Hart to win the Intercontinental Championship in about 26 minutes of an absolute classic.
Mm-hmm. Non-stop action. I mean, and what's amazing about it, there isn't a lot of high spots. There isn't a lot of goofy garbage. It's just old school simple. Start slow, get the crowd into it, and just go from there. Two guys that had wrestled 500 times before and just sort of knew what they were doing. So they aren't even calling spots, you can just tell. They just sort of are going.
Yeah, and that's a good point, too. The Hart Foundation guy against the British Bulldogs guy.
Uh-huh.
They know each other. They know each other.
Well, and they'd wrestled in Calgary a million times by that point, too. So.
Yep. And possibly Japan.
Yep.
When the Calgary guys would go on tour over there. And, of course, the lead-up to this match is, you know, Bulldog gets the title shot because he's the number one contender, but then it's tearing the family apart, and Diana's stuck in the middle, and I think wasn't there more family in the crowd? I can't remember if Stu and Helen were there.
Not at that one. No.
Yeah, by then Stu was already 200. They couldn't be flying him.
Right. They had to dust him off next year at Survivor Series, but yeah.
Oh, God, hey, looks like he waxed another Bruins hat. Yeah, so that was the angle here. So you got another babyface versus babyface matchup where there's a little subtle heel action.
Brett's not even that subtle of a heel during the match. Like, you know, does everything to get the crowd going, really. Every time Bulldog tries to make a comeback, Brett squashes it and really just gets the crowd against him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good work by Brett, you know, professional
mm-hmm.
Brett.
Once
understands.
Again, Brett had extensive history as a heel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was coming up the pike, so.
He's got a salty, salty pass.
Don't tell me that.
watched this match like 5-6 days ago, and it holds up. Still, because it's just a classic match, there's nothing about it. There's no major spots. There's nothing that just seems stupid in hindsight. It's just solid. Absolutely, perfectly solid. So.
Yeah. And coming off the heels of Brett versus Piper at WrestleMania, I mean, this is like Brett starting to come into his own
mm-hmm.
as a real top-notch, world-class performer. And just
right.
for what it's worth, too, the finish of that Piper match with the sleeper that, you know, Brett
kicks
off the ropes and does a little, like, whatever pinfall, or pinfall scenario. And then you get this one with the Brett attempting the sunset flip and then Bulldog sitting down on him and grabbing the legs.
Well, like, and what's great is the match, the finish kind of comes out of nowhere in a believable way.
Yeah.
Like, they haven't been building to a finish that just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, well,
it's
that was really innovative for the WWF at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't seeing finishes like that anywhere in WWF.
Nope. So it was just great.
Yes, it was. I don't know. I think that pretty much sums it up for the number one SummerSlam of all time, SummerSlam 1992.
Yep. Which is great, and you know, still great, but in retrospect, it's even better because that was WWF was having a lot of problems at the time. The whole Titan Gate and the, you know, the Pat Patterson and Garvin sex scandal, and
this is the first pay per view without Hulk Hogan.
Uh huh.
So yeah, that's, I mean, I think that would be rough on him, and I think business wise it was. But,
yeah, it was. It was a bad year business-wise, but
they wouldn't make up for it in live. God damn it, I can't spit my fucking thought out. I'm not saying they made up for it with the live gate, you know,
no.
The loss of pay-per-view. But no, Dusty, like you just said, quality-wise, the card was head and shoulders above, you know, stuff that Hogan had been on for the last 6 years.
Because of the steroid scandal, they started getting rid of those guys, the warlords, the, you know, the guys that were just steroids with legs. So it sort of left to the guys who could actually still work there,
and Warrior.
but he wouldn't be long for the WWF world either. So.
No.
But look at the
champ
in 92. Flair. Savage.
Well, it goes, Flair, Savage, Flair, Hart.
Yep.
And then you're
here,
Intercontinental Champion.
Saskatoon! I can't even find Saskatoon on the map!
The Intercontinental Champions, you know, you got Hart comes in this, that year as the champ, as the Mountie, for what it's worth. He was Jacques, you know, you love him.
Right.
Jacques Rougeau, to Piper, who's great. To Hart, Bulldog, to Michaels.
Yep.
You know, you got great champions that year.
Mm-hmm. So.
It was a very good year.
When I was 17.
When I was 11.
I would have been 13, yeah. So.
All right. Well, folks, I think that pretty much does it for the best SummerSlam pay-per-views of all time. That is winter music. A winner is you. So we are going to stop this now. I was going to say cut it short, but it's not fucking short. That's for
no,
sure.
It isn't.
We're going to stop talking now, and we will get on this worst SummerSlam, and we'll get it to you in due time. But I'm going to sign off, and then if you guys wish, you can also sign off.
All right.
Okay,
I'm
that was Jordan sign off. Dusty,
okay, I'm all right. Oh, I didn't know what was going on.
Sign off. Get inside. Find shelter.
Right,
tornado. Okay.
For Jordan and Eric, and for tornado warnings, and for the Texas tornado. And, you know, tornadoes aren't really good for anything but kicking up some dust and knocking over a few
mobile homes in some hick trailer park. Out of the panhandle.
Remember this! You are listening to the audio of Ken Franny. All right, we'll try to do better next time.